And we are coming together live for a fabulous show, a great edition of The Green Front coming up. I'm very excited about our guests. We're going to have three segments on the program. First, I'm always pleased to welcome my occasional, fairly frequent co-host, and that is D.R. Tucker, my favorite Republican climate convert. For the first segment, he and I will be conversing with the head of the Evangelical Environmental Network. The CEO and President, Mitch Hescock, will join us momentarily. We'll be talking about a billboard that is up outside the Republican convention site in Tampa, Florida, that claims that Ohio Governor John Kasich says that climate change is a problem, and that is actually true. He has said it. We'll put it in context and get some reaction, and also just a little bit more about what the Evangelical Environmental Network does. Been aware of them for years. They do some fabulous work called Creation Care, and that certainly fits into what we consider action on the biggest threat to our planet and our species and our home. So that is coming up in just a moment. In our second segment, we'll be interviewing, I will be anyway, hope DR can stick with us, but not sure, one of my sheroes, Sandra Steingraber. She is a biologist, she is a doctor, she is an author, she is an ecologist, she is an activist. She is first and foremost a mother, and her latest book, her third, is called Raising Elijah. We'll be talking to her about one of her recent concerns, and that is fracking. She says it is not safe. There's no such thing as clean fracking at this point. It is dangerous to people living in the area, and especially harmful to young children. And then in our third segment, we'll be checking in with one of our favorite environmental activist groups, and that's 350.org. They have a new effort to get Mitt Romney, who would be president if the Republicans had their way. We don't think that anyone who doesn't understand our green challenges should be let anywhere near the White House, and so far, based on his release last week of his energy policy, Mitt Romney does not even acknowledge climate change, not only as a problem, but even mentions the word, not once, in a 21-page report on his energy plan. So we'll be talking about all that in the show today, and want to first say hello to D.R. Tucker. Thanks for joining me, D.R. Last week, I was at the Al Gore training. That was a three-day event, and so we did a rerun of one of the Best of Betsy shows. So great to be back live.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good. I'm very happy to be interviewing our first guest. Do we have Mitch Hescock on the line?
You have it. Good day to you both.
Hi.
Yes,
thank you so much for joining me. You had the Evangelical Environmental Network, a group I've been aware of for years. Let's just start with a little bit of background for those who don't know that you exist. What prompted the original concept for your organization, and when was that?
We actually started in 1994, and we were a growth out of Evangelicals for Social Action, which was founded by Ron Sider in Philadelphia well before that. And our care is that we wanted to speak into the evangelical church to lift up areas of what we call creation care, that since the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 2:15, we've been called to care and tend for the earth. And so it's our responsibility of people of faith as evangelical Christians to care for God's earth, because it's the one he made for us. He made it sustainable, and it's our mistakes, our sin, that causes the earth to be unsustainable and to harm human life.
And whether one believes in creation or evolution, it's still, I would think, a sin to destroy what we've been given for life.
Oh, absolutely. And, we can talk about that debate some other time, but for right now, I think anybody that's a believer, wherever you're at on that side of the issue, has a biblical mandate, if God created it, however he did that, to care for it.
A very good point. Mitch, in light of the recent debate over, the Republican Party's position on abortion and the whole, debate over, when does life begin and, when it can or cannot be terminated, do you think it's kind of odd that so many of the participants in that debate seem to be pro-life with regard to abortion but not pro-life with regard to pollution?
Well, absolutely. In fact, DR knows well that I was challenged by some Republicans on Capitol Hill earlier this year, for we as an organization believe that pro-life is a matter of pro-life from conception to natural death. And when we were trying to work on the mercury and air toxic standards, we really believe that that was a pro-life issue, because one in six children in the United States are born with threatening levels of mercury. And so we're trying to wake up our constituency, who many evangelicals already believe in that definition of pro-life, but to see from a political perspective that being pro-life is a matter of whole life. And so absolutely, that's, we've been talking that language, offering that language, and have many people agreeing with us across the nation that really being pro-life is a matter of whole life.
And how large is climate change a threat to our tending of the garden? I mean, humans have been asked to take care of what we've been given for, you know, forever, and yet, going back to the Garden of Eden, but we are doing damage in record time here by continuing to ignore this challenge of global warming, are we not?
Oh, absolutely. We believe that climate change, global warming, however you would like to phrase it, is the greatest moral, biblical challenge of our time. It affects every aspect, especially of human life. You know, currently today, at least 300,000 people die every year around the world because of changing climate. We like to talk about climate change in people terms, in terms of food security and water security, increased impacts on human health, increase in forced migration of people, and obviously the increase in conflict resulting in scarcity of resources. And not only that, we're looking at our oceans right now. The over-acidification of our oceans and the death of coral could be one of the, you know, right now, you know, the oceans are as much as 80% of our supplier of oxygen. And if we kill our oceans, we've doomed ourselves.
And yet you don't hear any Republican candidates talking about these issues other than perhaps Governor Kasich. Tell us a little bit about how that billboard came to be put outside the convention center in Tampa.
Well, actually, we have a whole series of billboards featuring Governor Chris Christie, former President Bush, the Ohio governor, Senator Murkowski from Alaska. We have a whole series of billboards and actually signed placards and taxi cabs with pretty famous Republican leaders acknowledging that they believe that climate change is real. And so what we're doing is, I mean, I've been a registered Republican all my life. What we're trying to do is to try to depoliticize this issue, to help our Republican friends, especially in leadership, to see that this is a human crisis and not a political partisan issue. So the reason we put those ads up down there is to say, look, there are Republican leaders out there that say that climate change is real. We need to face the facts. We need to quit playing games and come up with a bipartisan solution that will help us to address this most challenging moral situation, problem, crisis of our time.
You mentioned the Republicans who have expressed their acceptance of the science. And speaking of the Republicans and the Republican National Convention, I was reading on Slate this morning that one of the honored guests at the convention was none other than the libertarian billionaire and climate change denier David Koch. Do you see an overlap between libertarian ideology and sort of rejection of climate science? In other words, the idea that, you know, the objectivist vision that, you know, you take care of yourself and you're not responsible, you're not supposed to be your brother's keeper, you're not supposed to be responsible for the fate of the world. Do you see an overlap between that and someone not caring about what kind of damage climate change will do? They'll just simply declare it a hoax and be done with it?
Well, I think there certainly are. Certainly as a Christian and as an evangelical Christian, I believe there's a lot of contradiction between being a libertarian and even being a conservative. Mm. You know, I believe that we as a people combined, I look at John Winthrop's role for a model for Christian charity, you know, written in 1630 outside of Massachusetts in the Bay before he came on board and became the first governor, that we have a responsibility as a people to care for each other. And, you know, I believe in free market values. I believe that companies should have the chance to succeed. But I also know without good standards that are in place, the companies will go wild, especially in the day where we're dealing with international companies. You know, it was one thing if you were living 200 years ago and you went to the cobbler and he made bad shoes. It was real easy to get his neighbors to really to rise up against him and not buy his shoes anymore. Well, it's hard not to buy oil from ExxonMobil. We just don't have the same market responsibility pressure today because of these big international corporations. So my answer to that question is, you know, yes, I think there certainly is, you know, a lot of fuel. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit that I would like to see campaign finance reform on both sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, spending hundreds of millions of dollars in a political campaign from when people are suffering both here in the United States and around the world, to me, is just a blasphemy to God.
And not to mention, one of the candidates has released, Mitt Romney, his energy policy in 21 pages. I have not read it, but I am told there's not one mention of climate change. That is irresponsible, if not criminal behavior, as far as I'm concerned, given the urgency and the crisis around us, evident everywhere, especially this summer. You know, after we had this record heat and fires and droughts, and now, you know, hurricanes, tropical storms that are perhaps going to be the other extreme in terms of moisture damage, and especially hitting New Orleans on the 7th anniversary of Katrina, and to not be talking about this in connection with climate change is not a good recipe for someone who wants to be leading this country.
Well, and I think right now you've seen across the country that there is becoming a great groundswelling of people being aware of climate change. You know, we did an advertisement a few months ago when the new source carbon pollution standards were out, encouraging people to stand up and recognize that carbon pollution and climate change is real. You know, we had over 58,000 people respond to us, evangelical and pro-life Christians, acknowledging and recommending that we need to do something with carbon pollution. So I believe we are starting to see that movement. But really, to push our political leaders, our policy leaders forward, we have to get people who are conservatives, theologically, morally, even politically, to start understanding and believe that climate change is real and put that kind of discussion on our political leaders. And that's what we're trying to do with our ads in down in Tampa right now. And, you know, we've done the same thing to the current Democratic administration. We would have loved to have seen their current president's administration do much more on climate change. And we've pushed them just as strong as we're pushing the Republican Party today, because it is a nonpartisan issue. People are dying, and we have a responsibility to care for those people, especially the way we have abused and put out carbon pollution. And you know, we can't go back and say, you know, really, so, you know, claim why me that, you know, we burn fossil fuels. In many cases, we didn't know, but now we know, and now we have an alternative. That's why things like the new source carbon standard, the fuel economy standards that were issued yesterday, you're going to be talking about fracking in a minute. We support, whether you're pro-fracking or not fracking, the new EP proposed standard for eliminating the methane leaks out of all natural gas pipelines. Those are some practical things we can start doing. And certainly, if you saw last week the announcement that, you know, the switch to natural gas gave us a momentary break in the increase in carbon pollution, which is a good thing. And again, natural gas isn't the way of the future, but if it can start us on that downward slope of reducing carbon, I think it's something we at least have to take note of.
So you see it as a viable transition energy alternative for now?
As a transition only. You know, I think that's the key, is it's not the long-term future of carbon, but we have to do something as we transition. And I think for me and myself and where we're looking at right now, an organization is seeing natural gas as a transition fuel for the next 2 years as we get more sustainable and more clean energy on the table. I think it's a way to go.
Mitch, we've mentioned Mitt Romney's current now rejection of the climate science, but also another disturbing factor is Vice President is running mate Paul Ryan's rejection of the science. And recently, there was a radio broadcast in which a representative of the Chevron Alliance, the Cornwall Alliance, defended Paul Ryan's rejection of climate science. Are the Christians you encounter aware that the Cornwall Alliance is basically a fossil fuel front group?
Well, I can't answer if they know that or not. The Cornwall Alliance is quite honestly the biggest nemesis to us. They were founded really to be a countervoice to us in the evangelical community. You know, if I would say that it's blue, the ocean is blue, I'm sure that the Cornwall Alliance would say it's green. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, we strongly disagree with Dr. Beisner's position, and we believe that his theology is not mainstream theology. We respect him as a brother in Christ, but we certainly disagree with him on climate change, and that's where I'd probably like to leave that one.
Okay. Now, part of the reason emissions went down, in addition to natural gas, I think it had something to do with the economy being in recession, less manufacturing. So that part, if we do get a recovery, is going to change. Certainly, there's no reason, I mean, I would say celebration is too strong a word, especially because there are so many concerns about fracking. But, you know, if we do see economic recovery, how can we not see, you know, emissions go, you know, through the roof again? What else do we need to rely on? I would imagine you're in favor of scaling up solar and wind energy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we're pushing for a clean energy future, and I believe that that is quite capable now. And I think one of the things, the way we could start doing that, is let's get rid of all the subsidies on fossil fuels. I mean, I think that's a great start, that we've stood long and hard that we need to get rid of those $60 million, it's about $1 billion a year, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, of what we pay to keep the coal and oil industries going. And the other thing I think we need to really come to grips with in this country is the cost of the externalities. Mm. You know, coal, oil, you know, the transportation costs that we pay for in infrastructure, the health costs from air pollution, water pollution. We need to be, if we're going to be true free market people, then let's add up all the external costs into the way we use fuels, and then let's make a judgment and call it. But until people have a free lunch, and let's make no about it, the fossil fuel industry has had a free lunch for, you know, over a century. You know,
they're getting a bonus to pollute our planet. That's how someone put it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if you look at most of the studies, it costs 19 cents a kilowatt if you add up all the externalities for making electricity from coal. We can certainly do a lot better than that with wind and solar right today.
Very good point. Mitch, what's your take on this new group known as the Young Conservatives for Energy Reform? I noticed that an officer with the Christian Coalition is involved with it. Do you think that might be able to make some headway in terms of sort of getting Republicans to drop the denial?
I'm hoping so. I have yet to talk to Michelle Combs about it. I would love to engage with her to see what her thoughts are on that, but I think their group, a group that we're obviously very fond of called Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, mm-hmm. is another group that is out there that, you know, we're certainly working with and recommending them, because I think there is a movement of young evangelicals and young conservatives that they're looking at their future. They're looking at their children's future. They know what it's going to be like.
You know, whether there is such a thing as clean fracking, I guess, is debatable at this point. Certainly lots of opinions, you know, saying that that's not possible. But if you watch the Republican convention on CNN, as we had on last night, I feel it's part of my job. My husband said, why are you watching this? You're just going to get upset. I said, I have to. You know, this is part of what's going on environmentally. And all the ads, maybe not all, most of the ads, 80% of them were either for clean coal or clean natural gas. That says a lot, doesn't it?
Well, it is, and I think, you know, I live in Pennsylvania. I'm actually the son of coal miners. I actually spent the first 14 years of my working career designing and putting coal equipment into coal-fired boilers around the world, so I know the coal industry very well. And it's time to change. I mean, I'm one of those converted people from being a coal person to a clean energy person. And as far as fracking goes right now, which is, you know, certainly hot news in Pennsylvania, we need to have some definitive medical studies out there to show us if the health concerns are really valid or not. And I know you're going to have a guest talking about that. I went to a seminar a few weeks ago up in Williamsport, and we have a lot of conflicting reports. We have a lot of symptoms that aren't traceable, and we just have no base level data, you know, of really the health impacts that are documented. I had, you know, physicians stand up in this meeting and said, you know, those symptoms could be for 1,000 things, and we just can't track them right now. I have tremendous concerns, especially about the concerns of what goes in the fracking fluids. Also, the cheap quality of cement that Chesapeake Energy has used, and was just, you know, found out about this week, of one of the problems of gas leaks was not the actual drilling itself, but pure, you know, poor sealing of the wells, the casings, after they were installed. I mean, it's almost like the Mercado deep water spill, what happened there in the Gulf, you know, several years ago. So, I mean, I think I am not pro-fracking, but I'm not anti-fracking yet, because I think we have to know to have some more reliable scientific data around to make really make an informed choice.
And given the dangers of coal and some of the dangers associated with fracking, at least at this stage in its development as an industry, wouldn't you think we'd be hearing a lot more about the need to conserve? I mean, if we are, you know, putting oil rigs, you know, a mile out and down in the ocean, and we are, you know, fracking rocks to get natural gas, even though it is cheap right now, there is a cost, of course. Why are we not, you know, making a dent in our wastefulness? I mean, maybe we are, but as far as energy efficiency, you'd think that given the urgency and climate emergency, we'd be hearing a lot more, you know, about the need to conserve and be more efficient on the part of citizens.
Well, and certainly you're preaching to the choir on that one. You know, we at EEN are just starting a program called Light Up the World, in the name of the Light Up the World, where we're going to be trying to teach churches and members of those churches to become energy efficient and actually transform their energy savings dollars into providing sustainable clean energy in the majority world, so that people can have electricity. You know, over 2 billion people have no reliable electricity any place in the world today. 1.4 billion then have no electricity. And so we would like to find a way for us to become energy efficient, to then help our brothers and sisters who have no reliable energy, clean energy at all, other than burning coal and tearing down forests, to really to provide for their needs, to allow them to develop. But I think you've hit a question that I think we all need to ask ourselves as Americans, is we have, and maybe we've always been this way, been a consumer-driven society. And I think our lack of using energy wisely is no different than when the TV set breaks, we throw it away and buy a new one. You know, we have this tendency to use and consume, and we've lost the frugalness of a generation ago. Now, the people that understand, the people that understand efficiency are people like my parents who grew up, you know, in the Depression. They reused everything. They did it. They took care of it. And those values of that generation that is soon will be disappearing are just actually very important, a message that they have to tell the rest of us.
Thank you very much.
Very good point.
Just about out of time. Really, thank you. And we're some of us talking about launching a pre-election emergency campaign called Whether We Care, W-E-A-T-H-E-R, to put more pressure on those who would be president to at least talk about the C word. If we do that, we'll get back to you and see if we can do some partnering on that, because it sounds like your mission is very similar to that one, which is to get our, you know, political leaders to acknowledge we have a problem, or they shouldn't be leading. It's that simple.
Well, we'd agree that climate change is real, and we need to have our political leaders in our whole country stand up and say, you know, that this is a problem. In fact, you know, one of the most depressing things as we close here now is, you know, I'm proud to be an American, and I freely admit that. I grew up here. I love this country. My son's on his way back to Afghanistan for a second tour there. But we are the laughing spot of the world when it comes to climate change. You know, 400 million evangelical Christians around the world were part of a thing called the Cape Town Commitment 2 years ago, which said climate change is the most serious threat to poverty around the world. You know, our brothers and sisters in the church around the world understand that this is killing them, and they look at us and say, why are you being so selfish?
Yeah. And laughingstock is not conducive to, you know, being patriotic. So there's a little bit of a disconnect, some cognitive dissonance there. We just need to make that abundantly clear to all the voters of America. Thank you so much, Mitch. We've been speaking with Mitch Hescock, I hope I pronounced that correctly, CEO and president of the Evangelical Environmental Network, a group I have a lot of regard for, and I know DR feels the same way. Thanks for joining us, and DR, I know you've got to duck off, but great to have you on, and we're going to be speaking with Sandra Steingraber in just a moment. You will not want to miss that segment. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Green Front.